Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
Yeah. All right, so you went to get tested, and you couldn't get tested in the House of Representatives.
No. they were too busy. I told them that I had been in the presence of Louis Gohmert, the great Louis Gohmert.
Yeah, I saw where he tested positive. That's my sister's congressman down in Texas.
Does she live in Tyler?
She lives in Hemp Hill, which is south of Tyler.
Okay. Well, yeah. Louis's a great guy. And when I found out he tested positive, I thought, well, I'll go get tested. I'll just go down here to the house physician. By the way, I did receive an immunization there when I was traveling overseas. I was able to get a vaccination down there. That was a couple years ago. So I thought, well, I'll just go get the test. And I called up. They didn't answer their phone a few times because they were busy. Then I finally got through. I sent my chief of staff down to the office. We finally got through. And they said, well, we don't think you're really high risk. So if you want to come in Friday, which is two-day wait, we can probably squeeze you in then. Now, this is the irony. We've spent $4 trillion battling this virus,
wow.
And the House of Representatives still doesn't have the capacity to test its own members when they need it.
That is the real story of this entire crisis, is that we've been in crisis mode for 6 months and almost nothing has been done in terms of being able to tell people what to know about this virus. And in terms of beyond just getting hospital capacity up, what else are we doing to actually build the infrastructure to handle an outbreak like this? It's pathetic.
And you can't blame the president for this, okay? The reason we know Louis Gohmert has COVID is he went to the White House, and they said, well, let's do a quick test if we get on the plane with the president. The quick test showed positive. They said, okay, let's do the more involved test. That'll take 2 hours. And they're like, yep, you've got COVID. So Congress writes the checks. We've written almost $4 trillion of checks now, and we still haven't developed the capacity to test all members of Congress. So Pelosi just issued an order. The sergeant at arms will drag you off the floor. I haven't seen it happen yet, but I'm presuming that's what will happen. One of my friends was physically blocked by a guard from going into the House chamber, not because he didn't have a mask on, but he was going in the wrong direction. Now it's like at the grocery store, the aisle.
Yes. By the way, welcome to the podcast. Congressman Massey back on with us on the Disruption Zone. We tend to get to talking as soon as the phone picks up. So something doesn't add up to me, Congressman Massey. How is it that you have to wait 2 days to get a COVID test, but when Gohmert was going to get on the plane with the president, he got one immediately and then got another one within 2 hours?
Because Pelosi doesn't want us tested. She likes having an excuse for projecting fear on C-SPAN. She likes having an excuse for her members to stay home and vote by proxy. There are a myriad of reasons, I believe. I don't think it's an accident that we are able to spend $4 trillion and we haven't spent the money to get a rapid tester here at the House of Representatives. Now, you might say, well, we don't want to look like elitists, but the world is depending on us to help solve this problem, right?
Right.
And there was a time when they dug a hole in the bottom of a mountain to save Congress in case there was a nuclear attack.
Right.
That's the Greenbrier in West Virginia.
Right.
And I'm told there's something somewhere else now, but I don't believe it. I don't believe it. But you either have to decide Congress is important or it's not important, that the functioning of Congress is important, that the budget, the Social Security, all of these things are important and they need to be legislated and voted on. And if they are, then we need to get over the projection. We need to get over the optics. We need to get over the virtue signaling that, oh, we're just like everybody else. And
right.
So we're not going to have a rapid tester here. Leland, I could get on a plane, fly to Lewis County, Kentucky, get tested at the local health department, and get a result quicker than I could get one here in the House of Representatives.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's all because they're trying to project this air of a common person. But yeah. I think they're also trying to project fear, and I think Nancy Pelosi likes to have a reason to be just as draconian in the House as they are in the state of Kentucky and elsewhere. Meanwhile, because we have to assume, because we're not getting tested here, and we have to assume everybody's got it.
Right.
The votes take an hour to complete. What normally would take 5 minutes, they drag out in the course of an hour.
Right. So you're all with each other together.
They try to bring us in alphabetically, but honestly, we all end up in there. It's just like we just end up in there for a longer period of time.
Right. Let me read you something I posted this morning. So Dr. Fauci said that in a piece that was posted on Apple News, because I got an iPhone, so I get all the propaganda from Apple. There was a piece in my Apple News alert that said, here's when Dr. Fauci thinks life might finally get back to normal. And the headline said, Dr. Fauci doesn't believe life in the U.S. will return to normal until sometime in 2021 at the absolute earliest. So I posted this and I said, this is interesting. The timing seems somewhat suspicious, does not? Right after an election. I'm going on the record with this prediction now. If Joe Biden gets elected, this virus will mysteriously disappear by January. I said, I'm not saying it's fake or it's not serious. It's very real, but our outsized reaction to it, driven by left-wing politicians and panic-mongering media, certainly is fake. The virus is very real. You should wear a mask when you go to the store, and you should socially distance. But if you really want to fight it, you should give up fast food, start exercising, and take lots of vitamin D and zinc to build your immune system. Unfortunately, the only way out of this virus, though, is through it. The experts and politicians are aware of this, and so is the media, but it's a lot more fun to crash an economy and hope that crashes a president as well that they hate. It's working. And when they're done, they'll want the economy open faster than a slippery racetrack so they don't get blamed no matter how bad the virus is. That's my prediction. My prediction is the virus is real. It's serious. I think there's almost no talk from the government about how people can better their immune systems. You and I talked about this last time you were on. And yet what's going to happen is I guarantee you, if Joe Biden gets elected, as soon as the election is over, we're going to start seeing all of these mandates disappear. The state of Washington's mandates mysteriously are lifted. Guess when? November 5th. Are you kidding me? Is that a conspiracy theory, or am I onto something here?
I think you're onto something. If they take back the Senate on November 3rd, the new Senate will be sworn in January 3rd. So COVID could end on January 3rd. if they win the White House, Joe Biden will be sworn in on January 20th, in which case we might have to wait. If they don't win the Senate, but Joe Biden wins the White House, we might have to wait until January 20th.
Yeah.
for them to say, you know what, we're going to have to go on with life, a certain percentage of death.
Right. They have to be in charge before they say that.
I.e. 100% can't eventually, right, can't be avoided, and we're going to have to go on with life, and here's what we're going to do.
Yeah. So let's talk about that debt. $4 trillion we've spent. We have almost nothing to show for it, although I guess you could say that vaccines are moving forward at a fast pace. Fast pace for vaccines is 18 months. But here's the thing. There's going to be all this panic driven. We don't know how that vaccine's actually going to work. I'm not trying to spread panic about vaccines. Just me personally, I haven't had a flu vaccine in 20 years. Last time I had one, I got deathly sick. I said, I'm never doing that again. I haven't had the flu since. I know that's totally anecdotal. I'm undecided as to whether I would take a COVID vaccine. I'm much more focused on trying to keep my immune system strong. And, you know, I don't know. What are your thoughts on the vaccine process and whether or not have we wasted a bunch of money there or what?
Well, because the liberals are going to scour your podcast to create a news article about me.
Yeah.
Let me lay down some ground rules before I wade into this.
Okay.
Number one, I wouldn't call myself an anti-vaxxer.
Me neither. Okay? I am not either.
I recently, about 2 years ago, you got immunized for hepatitis, tetanus, and diphtheria, and something else, because I was going to go to India, where presumably these diseases are more prevalent. Okay, I willingly, voluntarily decided to take those. They had more of that cocktail. They had the flu vaccine. They're like, we'll just give you this one too. And I'm like, no, you leave that one on the shelf. And they're like, why? And I'm like, because flu is no more prevalent in India. And I've never taken a flu vaccine. Don't need it. I've had the flu a couple times in my life, but I don't want the flu vaccine. So I didn't take it. That was right. My choice. Right. I evaluated the risk and I took vaccines, which I thought would be helpful.
Right.
Now, I am concerned that they are going to try and make these vaccines mandatory.
Right.
Now, either explicitly or from a practical standpoint.
Right. If you want your kids to go back to school, you got to give them a vaccine, that kind of thing.
Right. Your kids have to get vaccinated. If you want to go to work, if you want to go to the grocery store, like every bit of reasoning they are using for the mandatory mask thing right now, you can cut, copy, paste, and say they will do it for vaccine.
Right.
And that's a concern to me because everybody should be able to evaluate the risk and decide. By the way, I told somebody the other day, I said, look, you get the if you're worried about COVID, you get the vaccine and I'll get the virus. And
right.
Then,
right? See who fares better.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, if the vaccine works with any degree of reliability, I know no vaccine is 100% reliable, but if it's 90% reliable, then where do you have the right to tell somebody else to get the vaccine?
Right. Well, the left loves my body, my choice, right?
Well, let me walk through the morality of it. If one person can't walk up to another person and stick a needle in their body against their will, right?
Right.
We all agree that I can't walk up to Leland Conway and say, hey, I've got this fancy vaccine. I think it can help you. And you say, no, thanks. I can't grab you and shove the needle in you and inject the vaccine. Okay?
Right. Even if you think it's for my own good. Right.
Even if I think it's for your own good. Now, if 10 people think it's for your good, let's say you know, 10 people can't walk up and hold you down and do that either. That's not moral or legal or right in any sense. I think everybody would agree. Now, can 1,000, what if there are 1,000 people and they elect somebody? They all vote for one person to then go force the needle into you.
Right.
There's no difference in those situations. So it's not moral or ethical.
Here's the flaw in your logic. It is different because it's the government, and the government is there to help us, and that's what they're for, so we can trust them.
The government has never lied to you ever. Never.
Yeah. They know. We're going to talk about one of those lies a little bit later. I know you don't want to, but we're going to. We're going to talk about UFOs before we wrap up this conversation because of that New York Times article, just because it's fun.
Okay.
But yeah. Let's get into the debt, because I don't think people realize how big of a deal, because this is something I lay on Trump's feet. He has not been concerned about the debt, and I think COVID has exposed an awful lot of weaknesses in our nation, and one of those is that maybe our economy wasn't as strong coming into this as we thought it was. We've complained as conservatives about President Obama's expansion of the debt, nearly doubling it while he was in office. Trump's on track to do that again, especially if he gets reelected. Why is this a big deal? Why should people be concerned about what's happening here?
Well, let me evaluate the premise that the president, whether it's Obama or President Trump, is responsible for the debt.
Okay.
Congress has the checkbook.
Right.
It is Congress who passes the spending bills. The president put together a budget. It's a recommendation. Sends it to Congress. We don't really follow it very often. Like, none of President Obama's budgets has ever passed the House, and none of President Trump's budgets have ever passed the House.
Right.
Nothing even resembling them has passed the House. I had a friend, Mick Mulvaney, who then went, when he was in Congress, he always got much fun and delight by putting Obama's budget on the floor of the House and forcing everybody to vote on it. And it failed by 430-0 one year. And then another year, it got two Democrat votes. I always made fun of Mick Mulvaney for not even voting for his own bill that he introduced. But his point was that nobody wanted the president's budget. And so with that said, let me put the blame on Congress and the president, because the president has to sign a spending bill or it can't become law. And we've never had to override a veto from Obama or President Trump on one of the budgets that we have passed and sent to them. So the president is also culpable, that's for sure. And he's the biggest cheerleader for some of the spending priorities.
Right.
Okay. With that said, we are going to add at least $4 trillion in debt this year. So that means our deficit this year, the difference between the spend, what we spend and what we take in, is going to be at least $4 trillion.
Jeez.
So I went and looked up the income tax, which is the biggest source of revenue for the federal government. How much revenue does the income tax bring in? It brings in $2 trillion.
Right.
Okay, so if we tripled the income tax.
So that'd be like if I spent three times what I make this year.
Yes.
The only difference is I can't print money and the government can, but that's even worse, isn't it?
If you pay 25% of your income in income tax this last year, and we wanted to tax at a rate that would cause the budget to balance, we would have to take 75% of your income. We would go from 25% income tax rate to 75%. That is assuming that there is no negative effect on the economy or GDP when you triple the income tax. Of course there's going to be a negative effect.
Yeah, right.
Let's put it another way. The GDP, the gross domestic product of this country, is, you know, like $20 trillion, $24 trillion. We're going to spend $4 trillion we don't have. Like, you would have to go out and steal a quarter of everything that's made or produced by people and robots and machines in this country to cover this spending.
Right.
And we're going to have... We're not going to have roads and bridges to show for it when it's over.
Well, one of the problems, too, I think about, like, we don't make things in America really that much anymore. And so we have this economy where we're printing money to sort of prop up a consumer-based economy that right now cannot consume. Like, I think this is a very, very precarious time for us. And I think the debt is adding to that danger because... we can't go out of the house right now, really. I mean, we can, but, you know, nobody really wants to go to a restaurant because you got to wait 4 days to get a reservation because they keep, you know what I mean? And really, is it with all the fear and worry and everything? I mean, the Apple store where I live has a constant line out the door because they only let so many people in. Who wants to stand out in the hot sun waiting to go in? You know, it's like... There's a huge discouragement pattern of actual consumption. I don't know how consumption is doing. I haven't looked at those numbers lately. But we have a consumption-based economy. We don't actually make things the rest of the world needs. And we're printing money to prop up the consumption-based economy, which right now cannot consume. That, to me, seems like a very dangerous recipe.
Add to that we're making less product.
Right.
So I've heard from contractors and homeowners, but contractors, people who do this for a living, that they can't get pressure-treated lumber at Home Depot or Lowe's. Like, literally, when the truck arrives, they're there at 6 a.m. in the morning and buy all they can get.
Right.
Because, for one thing, people who are receiving the unemployment bonus, which is the best way to characterize it, the unemployment bonus, $15 an hour unemployment bonus. If your state... I'm saying $15 an hour, that's $600 a week based on a 40-hour work week. That's the federal unemployment bonus. But people who are able-bodied and staying home are getting bored and they want to do something productive, so they're going and building decks and buying pressure-treated lumber at Lowe's and Home Depot.
Right.
Meanwhile, they're not going to work and sawing the lumber.
Right, right.
So we're injecting money. You get more money chasing fewer goods. And if you're an accelerationist or a collapsitarian. These are your policies.
Collapsitarian. That's awesome. Let me ask you about the situation in Portland and maybe other cities. Do you have any concern about the federal government coming in? And there's rumors that people are being swept off the street in vans. I'm not sure that that's necessarily true. The more I look into this story, the more it looks like the feds are protecting a federal court building there that has been under attack and under siege for days. There's in Seattle, they just found, they raided a house and found bombs, explosives, all kinds of bats, different types of weapons that were being handed out to protesters. So obviously these are mostly peaceful protests, right? What is the constitutional line there? It's disturbing to me when the government is like, hey, you can't protest and we're going to come in with the feds and throw you in the back of an unmarked van. I mean, that's the kind of stuff you worry about. Is that really happening? Do you think Trump is doing that? Do you think it's a step over the line? What do you think about that situation?
You know, I've seen the video of somebody being escorted by two what looked like paramilitary police officers into a minivan. I would like to see an interview with that person. I want to know what was going on there.
Right.
Okay. If they are defending federal property, they're within constitutional bounds.
Right.
If they are trying to supplant or replace the local police, they are outside of constitutional bounds and doing something that's really unhealthy for our country.
And I think what concerns people is like when Trump says things to, like he said to the governor of Oregon, he's like, you either clear these protesters out or I'm going to do it for you. You kind of can't do that, Mr. President. I mean,
no
offense, but you can't clear protesters out. It's not how it works in America.
No. People expect, this gets back to the budget. People expect the president to act like a monarch and that he's all powerful.
Right.
The folks in Portland are getting what they voted for.
Yeah. Yeah.
The local police department, the local police officers report to a police chief who reports to the executive in that city, which is the mayor who is elected. And my solution to this is reduce the number of federal buildings.
Yeah.
Right? Portland.
I always like the way you think.
Like, we don't need to send federal agents to defend federal buildings if the federal buildings aren't there.
Right. Well, what about, it's a courthouse, though. I mean, aren't there federal cases in Oregon that need to be dealt with?
There are way too many federal laws. Get rid of the federal laws that they're prosecuting. Counterfeiting and piracy and treason and patents, okay? There really aren't, or maybe dinking or maybe stealing the U.S. mail, right? There aren't supposed to be that many federal laws. We've got about 100 times more federal laws than we're supposed to have.
Right.
They used to have circuit riders that would, you know, temporarily set up court. Like, the court system wasn't always this way.
Yeah.
The states could handle most of what's being litigated in the courts that have been set up since the country was founded.
Yeah.
Like, we've had different court structures. So my answer to, well, you got to have some federal buildings, you got to have the federal courthouse, is we've got too many federal laws. If we had fewer federal laws, you would have fewer federal courthouses.
Right.
And a lot of this stuff needs to be litigated at the local level. So I am generally against sending a federal police force. I mean, I was against the George Washington's enforcement against the Whiskey Rebellion.
Right, right. I didn't know you were that old. You were there?
No, but I've got a special place in my heart for untaxed corn. But,
I mean,
it's easier to transport. But, I mean, we've had these struggles all throughout history, and there are people, even among the founders, who wanted more or less federalism.
Right.
This has always been a struggle.
Yeah.
And I am for a smaller central government. And so I recoil when I see federal police officers, whether they're at the Branch Davidian compound or whether they're in Portland.
Yeah.
But the The difference, let's say, at the Branch Davidian compound, that wasn't federal property. That was private property.
Right.
They were trying to enforce, I mean, there were allegations of sexual abuse. Well, those are state laws, not federal.
Right.
Unless you're trafficking interstate, but they weren't accused of that. They were trying to enforce gun laws that shouldn't even be on the books, federal gun laws, not state gun laws.
Right.
And so I don't think they should have been there. At least there's a nexus for the police to defend a federal building, but the stuff that President Trump has said they can do, they can't do. But
yeah.
We've learned to discount some tweets.
I know.
The one that said I should be thrown out of the Republican Party.
Right. Right. Well, the problem for him, though, is that the media glomps onto those things. I mean, he said today, I think he tweeted, we should delay the election. No one thinks that's going to happen. He doesn't have the power to do that. But that just adds to the fire and the media. I mean, he right now, to be honest with you, President Trump is his own worst enemy. You know, I think what happened is, and this is, I don't want to get into, well, I'll just say it. The greatest gift that could have ever been given to Democrats is the hype over COVID, because they have essentially canceled an election campaign. The election's going to happen, but the campaign is canceled. There will be no campaign. So you have a guy who's practically dead. No offense to Joe Biden. I don't mean to be mean to him, but he's practically dead, sitting in his basement against a guy who is extraordinarily talented at campaigning in person, horrible at campaigning on Twitter, and Twitter is his only way to campaign now. So you have this sort of thing emerging where people are like, okay, we'll take the dead guy for the next 4 years. Like, that's what I see developing here, is because Trump is frustrated. He can't campaign the way he normally does, and he's sitting here on Twitter saying things like, let's delay the election. Hey, I'm going to send the feds into Portland. And it's only adding to this fire that the media is able to keep churning out. And so he's his own worst enemy. It's like, sometimes I just want to say, dude, just shut up. Just shut up. go to the basement like Joe Biden and stare at a camera. I don't know.
I've never run for president. I did help Rand Paul do it one time.
Right.
And I'll probably not get involved again in another presidential race to that degree. So I can't. You know, we can all offer opinions, but that's all it would be.
Right.
I know this is just the president's style.
Yeah.
He tweets outrageous things and then he backs off.
Right.
And the media kind of ends up chasing their tail sometimes.
Sometimes it works. Yeah. Sometimes it's kind of funny because it the media just, you look at them and you're like, dude, have you not figured this guy out in 3.5 years?
If I could give the president one piece of advice, see, I think a lot of this election is going to come down to this virus.
Yeah.
If I could give the president one piece of advice, it would be to expand the number of advisors, medical advisors, instead of having Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx.
Yeah.
Basically, writing policy that then governors adopt. And the president tweeting the opposite policy.
Right.
Get a broader set of opinions and views.
Right.
Get them all in the room, and hash it out, and then get on one page with our approach to this virus.
Well, Fauci said today we should wear goggles for better protection against COVID. So I'm looking forward to seeing Don Lemon and Jake Tapper and all those guys on CNN wearing goggles while they tell me the news. Because Dr. Fauci says it, it must be biblical.
Fauci lost credibility with me in a conference call we were on, a bunch of Republicans and Dr. Fauci, and we went to the question mode. And this was when we were in the hard shutdown, and I asked him like how we were going to open things back up and what would be the metrics for shutting things back down if we did open things back up. He had no answer whatsoever. But the more troubling answer he gave was to Representative Tom McClintock, who said, you know, there are some bad health effects to having all the hospitals shut down. People aren't getting diagnosed for diabetes and cancer. They're not even getting like certain dental procedures done. And so we're going to have, and mental health is suffering. How do you balance that? How do you quantify that and balance it with these other policies to prevent the spread of COVID? And Dr. Fauci said, well, I acknowledge that exists, but it's not really my job to quantify that, and we haven't quantified that, those negative effects. How can you set policy?
Wow. Right.
If you are doing it in a bubble and you're just trying to deal with one thing.
Yeah.
That's what if Congress in the budget only spent money on one thing every year?
That's like saying there's a guy being held hostage over by that fence. Between you and the fence is a crowd of innocent people. I'm going to drive this tank over those innocent people, kill 30 or 40 of them, and then rescue the one guy being held hostage. Right? I mean, that's the logic. In other words, if you're not going to assess how much damage and pain and terror and all that stuff is going to be caused by your solution, then your solution is bunk. You know what I mean? You have to assess those things. I mean, when our special forces go in to rescue a hostage, they're like, what's the possible collateral damage? What's the possible, you know, what are the chances we can get this guy out with the least amount of, you know what I mean? And it's, so to say that shows just an incredible level of ignorance of what his job actually is.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
And he may have something, you know, he's got a lot of experience, and he may have something positive to contribute to the discussion, but he should not be the leader in that room if he's not taking an all of scope view of things and considering the side effects of his treatment. If he's not going to do that, somebody else needs to be in the room to balance him.
Yeah. Isn't it the movie Outbreak where the one guy wants to essentially firebomb and nuke a whole section of the country? And they have that scene where they're in the situation room and the guy's like, listen up, people. You know, and he's throwing down the thing and he's basically like, the decision you're about to make. But what are they doing? They're considering the collateral damage, right? Even in a freaking Hollywood movie, they're trying to figure out, you know, how to deal with this. So I don't know. It's just crazy. We're running out of time here. I know I got to let you go. And we've kind of rambled over a lot of different topics. I didn't get to ask my UFO question, dadgummit. I'm sure you're relieved.
Oh, thank goodness.
But do you think America comes out of this? I mean, when you take COVID and you take the stuff that has happened this summer, I think there's real need for police reform. But I think the stuff that is bubbling out of this right now is like, it just, things have just gone haywire. And America is so divided. I've never seen this before. Do you think we get out of this?
There's permanent and lasting damage from this. 3 years from now, the guy can just tell you from the farming aspect of it. The fact that kids aren't going to school and aren't drinking the milk and that the dairy demand has gone down. People are killing off dairy cattle. Takes 3 years to make another one. Okay. You don't just start milking a calf when it's born. Right. So I can tell you like the implications in the supply chain to fix them are at least 3 years.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
I think it's worse than that. I think we're being taught to distrust our neighbors. I think we're being told that it's dangerous to go to church. There are some lasting things. There are childhoods. Kids' whole childhoods are being stolen from them. They can't spend time with their friends. They can't socialize. That will leave a lasting impression that's going to be two generations long. And then the stock market, have you noticed the stock market is doing just fine? Why is that?
Huge disconnect, yeah.
It's because the big corporations know they're going to take the market share from all these mom and pop stores that have gone out of business, not just temporarily. They're pricing it into their permanent business model. Their permanent projections for profits are that the small restaurants, the mom and pop restaurants, the independents are going out of business and the chains are doing great.
Yeah.
The Amazons are doing great. The local hardware store, not so great.
Yeah.
And that is a permanent change. That's a permanent shift. And it's dangerous for our country.
I agree. I hate to end it on a terrible note. You got anything positive? You got anything happy? How's your garden?
Let's see. Things are going well on the farm. I've got a robotic chicken tractor we're going to have to talk about sometime that's raising chickens for me while I'm in D.C.
Is this the one where you put them in a cage that moves across? The cage actually protects the chickens from predators but gives them enough room to hang out and eat bugs?
Yes. They eat bugs, they eat grass, it catches the rainwater, it runs on solar power, and it raises chickens humanely and healthy and while I'm in D.C.
Yeah.
It's literally raising my chickens right now. So that's something to be happy about. Technology, here, let me give you this one, Leland.
Right.
This is, I haven't gone to this well in a while, and I'm pretty sure there's still some water in it.
Okay.
I'm an engineer and an inventor.
Right.
And when people say, when they ask me in my role as a politician, they say, is the next generation going to be worse off than our generation? Like, is this the first time we're going to regress as a society and as a country since we were founded? Because we've always gone forward every generation. I look at them and they say, if you think politicians control the future, if you think we have to rely on politicians for everything, yeah, it's a pretty bleak outcome. But the reality is, politicians don't improve our quality of life. It's the inventors and the entrepreneurs and the engineers, and if they do one thing, it is that they prevail. They figure out a way to solve a problem in spite of all the things that are trying to drag them down.
Right.
So there are people, the inventors are still inventing, the entrepreneurs are still coming up with new ideas, and our quality of life is going to improve, not because of my colleagues, but in spite of my colleagues in Congress, and because of the people I went to school with at MIT, they're still working on things that will improve our life and extend our lifespans.
Right. Well, that's the somewhere down underneath of that, that's the American DNA. So hopefully it prevails through all of this. Yeah.
It's in us until they give us a vaccine that modifies our DNA.
There's the quote. You just gave them the quote. But you know what I appreciate about that, Congressman Massey, is you made them listen to the entire podcast before they got the money quote from you.
Hopefully the liberals are going to write an article hitting me after this podcast.
You made them listen to the whole thing. I love it. I love it.
They've already tuned out.
Congressman Massey, great talking to you. I'll let you get back to work. Or waiting for your COVID test or whatever it is you got to do there. best to you today, buddy.
Hey, thanks, Leland. Thanks for having me on your podcast. It's one of my favorites.
Awesome. Talk to you later.
Later, bye.
I love that guy. You made him listen all the way to the end for the money quote, which, of course, was said in jest. Yeah. I'm not optimistic, folks. I mean, I'm a generally very, you know me, you've known me for a long time. I am as optimistic as they come. And I agree with the last part of what Congressman Massey said. Well, I agree with a lot of what he says. But, you know, some people will make it through this. Those that are willing to thrive on stress and be innovative and seek out new ideas, that is the American DNA, and we will make it through. But I've never seen our country so divided. All right, thanks to Dynamics Productions in Lexington for their help with production of this program. Thanks also to JP Web Design for their help, to my co-executive producer and co-host Cameron Mills. Appreciate you. Follow me on Instagram. It's at Great Lelando and at The Disruption Zone. Also on Twitter, it's at Leland Show and at Zone Disruption. You can check us out there. We are a free podcast. We're getting thousands of downloads a week, and I definitely appreciate it as we continue to grow our audience. Please share it with your friends. You can download it at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and on iHeartRadio's app. Just search for The Disruption Zone and fresh new episodes delivered directly to your pocket, carrying me around with you everywhere you go. All right, that's it for me. I am Leland Conway. This is The Disruption Zone.